CHLY 101.7 in Nanaimo.
And welcome back to People First Radio. I'm Jan, and I'm here with Kevin, and with former candidate for Nanaimo City Council and 710 Club co-chair, Gord Fuller, and the City of Nanaimo's social planner, John Horn. We're talking about 2008, the year that was, and some of the stories that made the news.
In June 2008, dozens of people in several communities throughout BC participated in a stand for housing, standing peacefully at traffic intersections to show their support for increased social housing. According to the Citywide Housing Coalition, Canada is the only major country in the world without a national housing strategy. Nanaimo placed itself on the leading edge of dealing with aggressive panhandling. Constable Wally Taylor, the RCMP's downtown community police officer, said that police were working with the city's bylaw department to target a small number of aggressive panhandlers. And concerned residents near Nanaimo's downtown wanted city councillors to install needle drop boxes used to collect the discarded and possibly infectious items left behind by drug addicts.
John, how did the installation of the needle drop boxes work out in the end?
Well, I think it worked out pretty well. The take-up on them is a little lower than I thought. I thought there would be a lot more usage of those boxes. As it turns out, it's fairly low volume of needles flowing into them. But I suppose at the end of the day, it's a fairly low-maintenance thing. And you put up a box, and every needle that lands in it is one less to find in your front yard or in front of your business. So even though it's a small thing, I think that's what local government should do, is do the small things well and the details. And that's, I think you do 1,000 details, you add up to a big picture. And that's sort of the strategy we've been using. So
I actually noticed drop boxes on the ferries and places like that as well.
Yeah, they're everywhere. If you actually open your eyes and start looking, you'll see that a lot of businesses have them in restaurants and ferries, and it's a fairly innocuous thing. Yeah. So,
yeah, like John says, they're fairly innocuous, and the low volume is kind of interesting as well, because we have this Block Watch group that's going out, and they're continually saying they're picking up 350 to 400 needles a month. And yet if you talk to Nanaimo Association for Community Living, which has been taking people out and doing the same areas for years, their comment is they've never found more than between 40 and 80 a month. So you have to wonder
what's really going on out there. And I also know that the crisis intervention teams hand out individual sharp disposal boxes to people that they work with who are IV users. So everyone has their own personal drop box, too, that's involved in doing those drugs.
Mm. And naturally, if you talk to the RCMP, they'll tell you that injectable drugs aren't necessarily the drug of choice in the NAMO anyhow. It's a small portion of sort of the drug activity that takes place here. So. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Derek Spaulding wrote a column in the Nanaimo Daily News about the needle drop boxes in early June. He wrote, and I quote, "Talk to any of the residents who live near Nob Hill Park or along Victoria Road, and they'll tell you how worried they are that their children may step or pick up some of these possibly infectious items. The needle exchange programs collect at least 96% of the needles they hand out each month, but there are still some out there that need to be collected. Why not provide the users with a safe place to drop their syringes? It just makes sense. I would actually suggest making more. Put them in the old city quarter, near some of the apartment buildings, anywhere. They can't be expensive." And that was Derek Spaulding in the Nanaimo Daily News.
July 2008. We're looking at some of the local stories that made news last year for people and people's issues in Nanaimo. You're listening to People First Radio. Nanaimo police officers acquired the authority to require a standardized field sobriety test from any driver they suspect to be impaired by drugs, whether illegal, prescription, or over-the-counter. Nanaimo is falling short on services for children and youth with special needs. That was the preliminary finding from a Nanaimo unique kids survey. City Councillor Diane Brennan announced her bid to run for mayor of Nanaimo in July. Nanaimo's Loaves and Fishes food bank saw a drop in donations accompanied by an increased demand for its food. Two people died within hours of each other in Nanaimo's South End, drawing attention to the community's ongoing battle with drugs. 27-year-old Angel Dorshia was found near a phone booth on Halliburton Street, and 59-year-old Richie Walker Kirby was found in his apartment on Farquhar Street. The South End Community Association fought a proposal to bring a program called The Living Room into its neighborhood. Plans to put the drop-in center for the homeless into the old Balmoral Hotel on Halliburton Street were eventually scrapped. But the Canadian Mental Health Association, with support from the South End Community Association, proceeded with its plans for social housing at this location. Gord, what's happening in the South End now?
Well, the South End is still supportive of the Balmoral. It is having growing pains. Any low-barrier housing, when you're getting into it, as well as doing renovations in an existing building, there are going to be certain issues and the experience and the support. I mean, the great thing about the Balmoral is this is eventually 20 units of supportive housing on top of the 160 that the provincial government has committed to. So once they get that all worked out, it should be fine. I believe the offices for CMHA are almost completed, as well as the other offices that the outreach workers will be operating out of. And their meal program is going, but they're, you know, they are having those growing pains, and I think it'll be a valuable part of the community.
Mm-hmm. John, what I think is brilliant is the fact that because the liquor license was removed from that site, there's no other party that would have taken that old hotel and refurbished it. Any private developer would have knocked it over, eh? Mm-hmm. So what I like is that you've retained a chunk of the heritage history, be it a little bit dark history, I suppose, but nonetheless, it's kept the building in the community and revitalized it, and I think that's got a great historical piece there, and that's nice to see, you know.
Yeah,
it's a nice neighborhood, that neighborhood, actually. Just some beautiful old homes in there. We're reviewing 2008 and some of the stories that made the news that might be of interest to our listeners. You're listening to People First Radio. I'm Jan. I'm here with Kevin, as well with our guest commentators Gord Fuller and John Horn.
In August 2008, the city of Nanaimo expected a sharp reduction of discarded drug needles in the streets and parks of downtown and South End areas after 4 needle drop boxes were put into place. Nanaimo's population kept growing, but the city's crime rates appeared to be holding steady. So said crime statistics published by the province and compiled from the Uniform Crime Reporting Survey. Premier Gordon Campbell was peppered with questions about homelessness and poverty by the Chinese media in Beijing. The premier was in China for the Olympic Games and was challenged during a press conference. And in September 2008, Prime Minister Stephen Harper officially launched a federal election after dissolving the 39th Parliament, launching a 5-week campaign to determine Canada's next government. On the municipal front, a tumultuous 3 years as Nanaimo's mayor did not stop incumbent Gary Corpin from announcing that he would be running again. Nanaimo businessman John Rutan also announced his intention to run for mayor of Nanaimo. The Vancouver Island Health Authority awarded a $438,000 contract to Narcif Programs to administer youth withdrawal and supported residential beds on Central Vancouver Island. Narcif picked up responsibility for programs formerly administered by Adapt Society, which closed its doors March 31st. And the Nanaimo Salvation Army's food hamper program appealed to the public for donations. Food resources were exhausted, and the Sally Ann reminded the community that they needed help to make it to Christmas time.
John, food banks were particularly challenged this past year. What's your thought on why this came about?
Well, one of the things that happened, I believe, is that the population grows, but the status and size and facilities of the food banks have remained fairly constant, you know. Mm-hmm. So any organization or any service that is provided to people to a growing population, eventually it's going to get stretched if it doesn't grow. Mm-hmm. So I think that was part of that dynamic, was that the growth rates hit them at a certain point, you know. Mm-hmm. And then what I thought was really encouraging was the idea that the current food bank was experiencing long lineups and quite a bit of traffic, and so they looked to some of the churches to see if they could partner up and sort of distribute their efforts around the city a bit more. Some people were saying, geez, I have to walk 2-3 hours to get down here to get a bag of food. So they came up lucky with that, and they got some cooperation from the Brecon Church folks, and so they've actually satellited their operation, which is neat to see. So that's built their capacity a bit more, and as a result, they've got some more donations because they're tapping into different neighborhoods in this sort of way. So I think it's sort of turned the corner. There was a period where they were struggling to keep the donations up, and as we all know, the rise of food prices, which affected the third world dramatically, also had its impact locally at the food bank level. They would pay more for food and subsequently getting less for their dollar. So that was a complex picture, but I think it's sort of righted itself a bit now.
Gord, what did you hear on the ground? What did you see with regard to food banks this year?
Well, demand is way up with the food banks, and it's interesting in that we started 2008 in an economic high and we ended at an economic low. And the numbers of layoffs in the community and all of that have contributed to the increase in the use of food banks. The satellite idea is something that both Lowe's and Fish's and the 710 Club have been really pushing and trying to get going, and it's great that Lowe's and Fish's was able to do it, and the 710 Club is looking forward to being able to do that once we get our regular program up and going. So
that's right. We had spoken to a number of food banks on Mid and North Island just prior to Christmas, and everyone was commenting on the increased usage due to loss of jobs being primarily one of the biggest things that had started to affect our communities. We're talking about the year that was, catching up on some of the stories that we followed during 2008 on People First Radio. October 2008, Nanaimo RCMP fanned out to sweep up suspected drug dealers in South Nanaimo. Police were responding to complaints from citizens and community groups about increasing drug trafficking, prostitution, liquor offenses, and disturbances. And voters in Nanaimo's two federal ridings re-elected their incumbent members of parliament. Gene Crowder of the NDP was re-elected in Nanaimo-Cowichan, and Conservative James Lunny in Nanaimo-Alberni. And this is an amazing piece of news. An anonymous donation of almost $1 million helped McSeed Society purchase a 28-acre farm in Cedar to house people with mental disabilities while helping them develop skills by working the land. The nonprofit society uses horticultural therapy to help people with mental barriers. And the BC Supreme Court ruled that Victoria's homeless people had the right to camp in public parks and green spaces. The judgment noted that in the absence of sufficient safe and secure beds for the homeless, it was unconstitutional for the city to prevent them from erecting some form of overhead shelter to protect themselves from the elements.
Gord Fuller, talk to us about homelessness and tenting in city parks.
Tents aren't homes, and yes, they will protect you from the elements, and so will a tarp. I've constantly, when I talk to bylaws and the community policing, encourage them, if someone is actually camping out and they're not causing a problem, leave them alone. Don't keep moving them on, because that in it will cause more problems in the long run by not allowing that person that safe place to sleep. We haven't seen a huge amount of problems with large campsites in Nanaimo. We have had some, and the working group actually did approach a campground south of Nanaimo to see if they would contribute some spots over the winter last year, and they just weren't into doing it, which is too bad, because at least at a campground, it's monitored.
And there's washrooms.
There's washrooms and all of that. But then also, if you allow people to use, say you allowed them to use Bowen Park to throw up a tent city, well, that makes it easier for the predators to prey on them, because they're all concentrated in the one spot. So you have your downsides to it.
Yeah. Sure, and it denies the use of the park to, say, kids playing. And if you're a mother with young children and you come across a homeless camp in your park, you're not likely to want to stay. So there's this balancing point of, you can give someone a place to camp, but then you potentially drive away other folks who have just as much right to a park as they, you know. So that's a tough one to find a nice balancing point there.
I mean, bottom line is we've got to get people into housing, and the housing first strategy not only calls for supportive housing, but trying to use rent subsidies and other means to get people into housing, and I think we can do it.
You're listening to People First Radio. We're talking about the year that was. I'm Kevin. I'm here with Jan, and Gord Fuller and John Horn have joined us as guest commentators today. In November 2008, there were few surprises as to what issues were top of mind for Nanaimo voters at an all-candidates meeting for Nanaimo City Council hopefuls. Housing strategies for the homeless emerged at the forefront of voters' concerns. The hot-button issue had an impact in on nearly everyone. Business owners, downtown shoppers, and especially and obviously those people living on the street. Renovations were completed on a new palliative care unit at Nanaimo Regional General Hospital. In the municipal election, Nanaimo voters made it clear the change was needed. John Rutan captured 46% of the votes cast and was elected mayor. Five of eight elected City of Nanaimo councillors were incumbents, while three new councillors were elected. The Nanaimo School District reinforced its anti-bullying message after several students in Nanaimo and elsewhere were assaulted for having red hair. And Nanaimo came one step closer to addressing its homeless and affordable housing needs. Rich Coleman, BC Housing Minister, announced the creation of 160 new supportive housing units for people who are homeless or at risk of homelessness in Nanaimo.
John, talk about Rich Coleman's announcements and what's happened since that announcement.
Sure. I mean, the announcement was based on a pretty basic principle which we've articulated to the provincial and federal governments, which is that cities, when it comes to social issues, cities should design the solutions because we're the ones that see it closer. Mm-hmm. But we shouldn't be the one resourcing those solutions. We should design the solutions, and senior governments should resource them. Mm-hmm. So that's, in essence, what we did with the Homeless Action Plan. Is here's a solution we think is what we need in our city for this particular social problem. And God bless them, the provincial government said we think that's a realistic solution. It follows best practice, and we're prepared to support it. So Rich Coleman stepped up to the plate and said we'll fund that particular initiative. In terms of the new build, certainly the component of the plan that talks about new construction anyhow. And so now what we've done is we've begun the process of examining the sites that are identified in that plan and looking at what kind of capacity you can put on each site and how might they be managed, et cetera, et cetera. So the ball's rolling as we speak, so it's great. It's going to take a while. It's all, anytime you build buildings, it takes a while, but it's starting to move, so.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty exciting, that meeting where the information was shared with the public about the new plan for addressing those issues.
Yeah. And it's great we have the Liberal commitment to doing this, but we do have a provincial election coming in May, and what I would like to see is the NDP commit to following through with the Liberal plans if they in fact get elected as a majority or a minority government, because we want that to follow through.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if we don't have that commitment by all parties, then it could just as easily fall through the cracks.
Yeah.
These issues will definitely be up on the provincial election, that's for sure. We've been talking about some of the stories that made the news that might be of interest to People First listeners. In December, John Rutan and eight city councillors took office at City Hall. The new mayor's first speech offered few specifics but included a call for greater transparency on council. Business owners in Nanaimo's Old City Quarter were upset that a street-level health clinic with a needle exchange program was sneaked into a Franklin Street Heritage Home. The delay in, or lack of, notification riled a number of business owners who questioned the suitability of the location and remained concerned that they were not consulted. And the First Unitarian Fellowship of Nanaimo opened its doors to the city's homeless this winter. The church joined the city's Extreme Weather Response Program, which provides overnight accommodation for homeless people when temperatures drop below freezing. The fellowship has 10 cots available and has partnered with the Salvation Army, which also had 10 beds available and still does.
John Horn, tell us about the Extreme Weather Response Program. I know you touched on it earlier, and I'm wondering if there's some kind of last-minute updates or experiences, things that people have learned. And also, if you don't mind commenting on the new initiative at Nanaimo's First Unitarian Fellowship.
Sure, I can do both those in the same time. And so the Unitarian, we've been discussing with that church for about 2 years how they could help with the homeless problem. They have a real commitment and willingness to do so. So they eventually came to the conclusion they would like to offer an extreme weather shelter to bolster the efforts of the Salvation Army. And boy, did they not anticipate 27 days of extreme weather as their first run. So yeah. I think it was a bit of a shock to their system. And God bless them, they hung in there, but I think they were anticipating 6 or 8 nights. nights, and now they've been going almost a month straight. So the weather, I think, took them a bit by surprise, and they're discovering, in fact, that their facility, it's pretty hard on their building. You know, like that, it's a church, and it's not really set up for this. So they're coming back to say, you know, we love doing this, we want to do it, but our physical building is really taking a beating over this, so we need to look at that next year. You know.
Mm-hmm. Gord, what have you heard, you know, around the 710 Club tables and with your ear to the ground? How has the response been experienced by the community?
Well, the really great thing about, and I'm not fond of the extreme weather strategy, but the really great thing is that we have had them open for so long. So this is actually, in effect, giving us a better idea of the numbers of people on the street as well. The Unitarian Church... like John was saying, they found that using it in their church space has been a bit of a problem. So they've actually moved it into downstairs where the old Elks used to be. I was actually talking to them earlier. And they're of the belief that, much as I am, that we really need to get the cold, wet weather idea back. I mean, ultimately, we need to get people into housing, and we can do it. But if we don't, I mean, it's just as crappy out there when it's 6-8 degrees and raining as it is when it's 0 degrees and dry and snowing. You know, so.
Yeah, no, it's an odd thing.
Yeah.
There was one thing I noted in the bulletin, or the, pardon me, the Free Press, that Samaritan House, the women's only shelter, was actually running below capacity at 75%. Does that strike you as real, Gordon?
It strikes me as real. And the number of women homeless has always been far lower than the number of men that are homeless in Nanaimo. And, you know, I mean, it's great that it is there, and it will also allow that added capacity if more women come out of the woodwork to access shelters, because we definitely need the space for the women, and, you know, they do a great job.
And one thing about the Unitarian is that people can show up as couples, whereas there's a gender division between the Salvation Army and Samaritan. So if you're hooked up with someone and you want to go together to the shelter, that's impossible with the two shelters we have now. And fair enough, because they have to manage the sometimes difficult folks, right? So, but with the Unitarian piece, they can go together, and that's a nice touch, I think. So
that's an excellent point.
This is People First Radio. I'm Kevin. I'm here with Jan today, and we're also joined by Gord Fuller, former candidate for City Council in Nanaimo and co-chairperson of the 710 Club, and John Horn, the City of Nanaimo's social planner. We've been talking about some of the stories that made the news in 2008. When we return, what do you think was the social sector's story of the year? People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with Open Minds, Open Windows Society, both of Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of these organizations. Please join us again next Thursday at noon for People First Radio.